Does nature reveal or conceal Hashem's presence? This question is really the distinction, the fault line between the believer and the non-believer, the Maimon and the Eino Maimon. Let me explain. To the Maimon, to the believer, when he beholds the grandeur of the natural world, the majesty of the constellations, the biodiversity of his own body, the grass upon which he treads, therein he sees the imprint of the Creator, the arrows pointing back to the Creator. Nature is the affirmation of the Creator. To the non-believer, on the other hand, the ability to probe the natural world and study the natural world and thereby arrive at understandings and explanations for its functionings, whether it's photosynthesis or gravity, well, that seems to cut the Creator out of the picture, as though because we understand nature, it's a force unto itself. Think about that expression. Don't mess with Mother Nature, as though Mother Nature is a force unto herself, a power unto herself. And the ability that we can understand her and the how she functions, well, that cuts the need for religion, for Amunah, out of the picture. Now, this latter belief of the Eino Maimon is irrational when you think about it. It is really avoidance. It is saying that because we could identify the how of nature's functionings, we need not think further and beyond to the why, or the even greater how did it get here? That we are looking at the curtain without considering that which is beyond the curtain, pulling the strings. But we can appreciate the appeal and even the comfort in simply focusing on the knowable without considering the great unknowable, i.e. Hashem. Well, this issue on how we relate to nature, I would like to trace within the Eser Makos in our parsha, the revelation of Hashem in nature, that it's really an issue of what our attitude is towards the physical world and the laws of nature. And I particularly want to trace this from the first Makah, Makah Stam, the plague of blood. Because Chazal teach, as cited by Rashi, that the concept of striking the water into blood had to do with the Mitzrim's deification of the Nile. They revered the Nile. They worshipped the Nile as a god because the Nile provided their basic needs. Well, Chazal tell us that when Hashem enacts retribution from a nation, he first strikes their god. So therefore, he first struck the Nile with Makah Stam, the plague of blood, prior to the other plagues destroying the Mitzrim themselves. Now, there is something powerful, gripping, and even visceral in this perspective of Makah Stam blood. Bloodying up the Nile River is slaying the dragon. Is as though killing this god, this phantom false god of the Nile River. But there's more to be considered here. Because let's understand in truth that the Mitzrim were polytheists. The Mitzrim worshipped many gods. The Nile was by no means their only god. And you actually see this in the later plague, the 10th plague, Makas Bechoros, when it says, "Abachol Ohei Mitzrayim Asah Shavatim, I will strike down their multitude of idols." So why was the Nile unique? Why was the Nile the god or the primal god to be targeted before everything else and before the Mitzrim themselves in line with the teaching? When Hashem strikes down a nation, he first strikes down their god, i.e. their primary veneration? Well, the answer is that the worship of the Nile is not just the worship of another god, of another pagan subject of veneration, but the worship of the Nile is really the worship of nature itself. The fertile delta upon which the Mitzrim lived, it was sustained by the Nile. The Nile was the great force of Teva, of fertility, of life on the Nile, on the delta. And when you think about it, veneration of the Nile then is really not an archaic ancient pagan belief, but really in line with modern secularists' veneration of nature and confidence that if you master the physical sciences and the natural world, you have all your answers and you don't need religion anymore. This is the nature and the physical science is the repository of all the ultimate answers to the questions, to all the great questions, and you don't need any more. And if you can marshal the sciences and nature for your interests, you're good to go. And you no longer need to fear disease and other threats as the ancients did. Ha, those ancients who had to turn to religion. That's how modern secularists see nature and their veneration of science and nature. It's functionally the same thing going on with the Mitzrim of old towards the Nile River, their source of fertility. And we begin to appreciate from a Tyrus Chaim, seeing the Torah as eternally relevant, that indeed the struggles in the Chumash, the struggles with the Mitzrim in this case, is deeply relevant today. While we might live in a different society with different mores, but functionally, the issue at hand, the attitude towards the Nile, whether the actual reservoir of the Delta or the forces of nature, whatever they might be, that man continues to venerate today and believe therein lies the answer to the great questions. That is, so to speak, the challenge to emunah, the challenge to faith. It's this misinterpretation of how to see nature, imposing this glass ceiling. Nature, and that's it, as opposed to appreciating that, in fact, nature is pointing to that which lies beyond. And from this perspective, there's a pasuk in the Haftorah Tar Parsha, proclaimed by the Navi Yechezkel, which is particularly powerful and gripping. He says, Paru Melech Mitzrayim, Hatanin Hagadol, the great Nile croc, Harovitz Besochia Orov, crouching in his Nile. Asher Omer Liuri, Paro the Nile croc, says, it's my Nile, Vani Asasini, and I made myself. Now this, on the surface, strikes one as sheer lunacy. Paro the Nile croc said, it's my Nile, and I have made myself. You've made yourself? Paro envisioned, metaphorically, as a Nile croc. I get it that he says it's his Nile, that he finds natural habitat in the Nile. But what does that mean? I made myself. You can't make yourself. That's a non sequitur. That doesn't make any sense. Making yourself, well, before you exist, you don't exist to make yourself. Right? But the answer is, when you read the pasuk sensitively, Paro, the Nile croc in the Nile, ensconced in this reservoir of abundance, he smugly says, I don't need the Creator. Of course, logically, I didn't actually make myself. But functionally, the power of a God, the power of a Creator now resides in me because I am master of nature. I am master of the Nile. And I am ensconced in it. I've been able to marshal it to my advantage. This is the same delusional smugness which a secularist has, which modern science has in terms of medical advances and the like, when they do not approach it from an emunah perspective, that this is a bracha from the Creator, an ability to marshal science, but by no means is science the ultimate answer. The signs provide the ultimate answers. But you understand, Liu Rivani is Sassini. The Nile croc crouches in the reservoir of abundance smugly. And ensconced, I have made myself cut the creator out of the picture. And this is, of course, as we put it, a delusional perspective. And when at the end of the day, with all of man's capabilities vis-a-vis the physical world, when we humbly have a brush with our mortality, with our limitations and the like, with the truism that at the end of the day we are limited, and knowledge of the natural world does not provide ultimate answers and certainly does not provide ultimate clarity concerning meaning and purpose and the like. Well, that's a very humbling realization, which is deeply unsettling to the paros and of old and the modern secularists alike. So they try to avoid it. They try to simply allow themselves to be obsessed. Obsessed with nature, obsessed with the physical world and their knowledge of it and their ability to marshal it, as we put it before, allowing this glass ceiling to impede their imagination and their ability to go beyond and deal with the great enchanting issue of a relationship to that which lies beyond, the great enchanting mystery of Hashem, of that which is beyond, of that which can provide ultimate solace, meaning, fulfillment, the neshama validation. And this delusion, this perspective, seeing the paro crouching in the Nile as really a pitiable being, deluding himself and those around him, is brought out powerfully from a well-known medrash when we tease out the deeper meaning of this medrash and go beyond an infantile understanding of the medrash. Because there's a medrash which we all learn in childhood, cited by Rashi in our parasha, which tells us when Moshe is told to confront Paro and warn him of the impending Makos at the Nile, upon the Nile at dawn. The reason for this directive was as follows. Well, Paro claimed self-deification. He told the Egyptians that he was a god. Well, how did he deal with the issue of his need to excrete? Not a very godly behavior. Well, in the Nile, at dawn, away from the people, unnoticed by the people, in the concealment of the riverbed and the concealment of the wee hours of the morning, he relieved himself and thereby was able to maintain in the public eye this above it all, above human needs, I'm a god. Well, what is the deeper meaning of this medrash? Why is it perpetuated in a Torah's Chaim, in an eternal Torah? Do I really need to know what the propaganda machine of the Paro of old, of that Goebbels of old, was? Does this really have a place? Deserve coveted real estate in the Torah, this gross depiction of how he dealt with his feces, you'll excuse me? There must be a concept, there must be a meaning here related by this medrash. Well, think about it for a second. What does the Nile represent vis-a-vis Paro? What we developed is the Nile represents his deluded smugness. I'm good to go. I don't need Hashem. I don't need the Creator because I have the Nile. He's, of course, that Nile croc who says, I've made myself because I have the Nile. I'm good to go. So Paro concealing his need to excrete in the Nile really means. Paro masked his physical limitations. Masked the, on a deeper level, the frightening state of man that at the end of the day, we're vulnerable. We don't have the ability to cope forever and under all conditions. And left to ourselves, we're kind of in the dark. We're groping for answers, certainly in terms of purpose and meaning, but even in an ultimate sense in terms of ability to survive. However far we advance in our knowledge of the sciences and our technological ability to marshal the physical world for our own interests, well, this frightening truth of our limitations is symbolized by Pyro's corporal limitations, as in his need to excrete. He masked it in the Nile to thereby proclaim self-deification. He is deluding himself and those around him by masking vulnerability in the smug attitude vis-a-vis nature and marshaling nature. And at the end of the day, this attitude of the Paros of old and the modern secularists alike, which we've come to see and understand, how our parashas are Tyrus Chaim, an eternal story, deeply relevant, no less in the era we live in than in this ancient story of old. Well, this deluded attitude of the Ein HaMaimon is so sad and pitiable, because at the end of the day, where does it leave man? When the delusional music comes to a standstill, when the ability to hide and conceal, to conceal one's limitations, to conceal and run away from the vexing questions like, what is this life about? At the end of the day, am I just a conglomeration of cells? Who am I? Where am I going? What am I forever? All of those issues that we can only deal with when we pierce beyond nature, when we allow our imagination and our consciousness to spiral higher to the enchanting realm of the metaphysical, of Hashem, the world of Neshama. Well, there is no greater gift than this ability to transcend higher, which is really what the relationship to Hashem is all about. This is what Klal Yisrael is teaching to the world. This is our gift, a gift bequeathed to us as Ma'aminim B'nai Ma'aminim, and one that we have in turn been teaching the world forevermore. Nature is precious, nature is beautiful, but it is only a painting. It's a precious canvas with brushstrokes, but it is only a painting. There is an artist behind it, and he is the true one to marvel at. He is the true one to connect to, and in with whom we will find ultimate satisfaction and purpose.